Hello, you.
You all right? Hope you are. Sincerely hope you are. You bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, rocking and raring for the day ahead. Come on, wakey-wakey, eggs and bakey. Let's get the day going. It's half over already. It's half over. Let's go. All right. It's now 8 a.m. in British summertime. On Wednesday, the 5th of August, in the year of our Lord, 2026. You guys know who you are. You're the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters, basically the best people on earth. Impeccable taste. Be tuning in live to the Bo Show. Breakfast with Bo, colloquially known as Breakfast with Bo. Hashtag the real BBC. Lotus Eaters Breakfast Club, don't you forget about me. Hashtag the real LBC. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
This embodied voice of the all-powerful, omnipresent producer there. All right, that's enough faffing about, though, isn't it? It's quite enough fannying around for one morning. Let's get straight into it. What is the legacy corporate lamestream media banging on about this morning? What is that cabal of evil? Quite frankly, evil. Certainly a cabal of Fleet Street editors trying to tell you is or isn't important today. What are they lying to us about by omission, like they do every single day? Do you think there'll be all headlines about the fifth Baron Rothschild and his connection to Epstein? No, no, there isn't. No. All right. We've got profits of war, oil companies, and super rain. It just that it rained. Super rain. Superman. Super gran. It rained, that's all. A bit. Super rain. What are you... What are they talking about? What planet are they living on, really? Oh. All right, that is what this show is, though, looking at the papers and what's in the news cycle, in Britain at least. Okay, The Guardian. Ooh. Straight off the bat with The Guardian. It's a bit early, isn't it? Turn my stomach. Okay, I haven't eaten anything yet, really. Right, The Guardian. Profits of war. Oil giants make $90 billion from price surge as climate crisis engulfs Europe. Climate crisis. Price surge. What are we talking about? Should we have a look at... We look at the price of oil, don't we? Crude on the open market on this show a fair bit. Or not every single day, but more often than not, don't we? Just have a quick check-in with it. Should we have a check-in with it right now? Since they're talking about price of oil. The profits of big oil companies, but still. What have we got? Let's have a look. Huh. West Texas, $75. Brent, just over $79. Interesting, isn't it? About the same, if not less, than when the war started. This war, Benjamin Netanyahu's and Mr. Trump's war in Persia. Less, slightly less. Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable, I find that. Still, the actual price that crude trades on isn't the same thing, is it, as what we pay at the petrol pump, and also isn't really the same thing as the amount of profits that big oil companies make. Still, nonetheless. Interesting to note the price of crude. All right, so The Guardian, because of course they're communists, aren't they, really? More Fabians. They'll say, no, we're not communist. You don't even know your terms. We're not communist. Yeah. No, just hardline socialists pretending you're not hardline socialists. We know. We get it. Windfall from Iran conflict triggers accusations of, quote, cashing in on human misery, quote. Well, I mean, to some degree... I mean, if you're a company that deals with things like that, it's not necessarily your fault, is it? Right? I mean, the share, take for example, the shareholders of a big oil company, they didn't make the call to start that war in Iran, did they? Not that I'm going to bat for the shareholders of big oil companies, I'm just saying that's not the way the world works, is it? They didn't start the war. They haven't shut the Strait of Hormuz, have they? So. Yeah, not them going to bat for big oil companies, but what I'm trying to say is, it is what it is, right? you happen to own stock in, I don't know, munitions companies, I wouldn't. I don't want to get all hippie tree huggy about it, but I wouldn't. But if you did, you owned your own stock in Boeing or BAE Systems or something, and then there's loads of conflict, and your company's worth, that company's worth more now, and your share of it is worth more. It's not like, it's not your fault. You didn't cause those wars or anything, did you? But anyway, you get it. You understand. It's not difficult, is it? Right. Jordan warns of Israeli takeover of holy site. I read this morning, and I find it interesting whether it will happen. I mean, Jordan warning of something is different to that thing happening, isn't it? But nonetheless. So what it is, if anyone who doesn't know, I've done some content about it before. I did a whole segment on the podcast a year or two ago, talking about the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the site of the Second Temple. And is this ringing a bell to anybody? 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 Where to begin with this story? Okay, in the middle of Jerusalem, right? In the middle of Jerusalem, there's a hill. In ancient times, there was more than one hill, but the highest point in Jerusalem, the very highest point in all of Jerusalem. In fact, in Jewish myth, isn't that where they said King David died, or was it where he was crowned? It's a point to do with King David, the biblical King David. Okay. It's also the point where after Muslim armies conquered it in what, like the 8th century? They also say, don't know if I got this right, apologies if I've got this wrong, mistaken in some way. That's also the point where they say the Prophet Muhammad ascended to heaven. Anyway, apologies if I got either of those details wrong, but the point is, the overarching point is, both Judaism and Islam venerate basically the exact same spot in Jerusalem. Okay? Now, back in ancient times, it's a temple mount, that mountain, the Temple Mount. The Jews have had a temple there for a long, long time. Was it Titus? Vespasian's son Titus in 70 AD that knocked down the second temple that stood on Temple Mount. And only one wall of it remains now. That's the Wailing Wall. If you ever heard of people go to Jerusalem, even non-Jews, and you go up to that wall, the Wailing Wall, and sort of venerate it in some way. Why anyone would do that who isn't Jewish? I don't get it. I don't understand. All right, but anyway, they do, don't they? That's meant to be one of the last remaining wall of the second temple in Jerusalem on Temple Mount. Okay. Now, the top of that is like a compound. This is today I'm talking about now. There's like a compound. And in the middle, like a big open space, like a square. It's not square shaped, but big open plaza sort of thing. Piazza, whatever you want to call it. And in the middle of that is a mosque. The Al-Aqsa Mosque, right? And inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque is that point where King David Muhammad point, the highest point on Temple Mount, right? Now, with all that said, it's been the case since like the 19th century that the top of Temple Mount and the Al-Aqsa Mosque is largely, if not exclusively, this, what I'm about to say, has ebbed and flowed a little bit over the years, but it's basically for Muslims only, right? And normal Jews are not supposed to go up there. In fact, a few years ago, like what, 10, 20 odd years ago, Ariel Sharon, remember him? Ariel Sharon? Anybody? Ariel Sharon, I think he was actually Prime Minister of Israel at the time. He went up there, like with an armed guard and like some official, and there was like journalists there, and it's like an official sort of visit thing, like a one-off sort of thing. And the Muslims went absolutely berserk. I mean, it sparked off an intifada. They went berserk. Not allowed up there, if you're Jewish, essentially. And that status quo, at least in recent decades, in recent long and few decades, that status quo has been sort of overseen by Jordan, country of Jordan, neighbouring country Jordan, just next door to Israel. Right. Okay, got the picture. That's basically the main facts about that. Well, this story had to explain quite a lot. I think a lot of people don't know, a fair few people don't know. If you already knew that, you're like, Bo, you're explaining it. Of course, yes. But I think a lot of people, like Harry, did you know much or any of that, really?
No.
Right, okay. So, apologies if I've dumbed it down for you guys that already knew it. But I think like, a lot of people don't really know much of this stuff. So, all right, so Jordan warns that Israeli takeover of Holy Site, the Temple Mount, they're talking about. That's what this story is. Whether it'll happen, whether it's just Jordan fear-mongering or they've got the wrong end of the stick or what, God knows, but this story says that Israel are, like, considering or they've got plans within plans to, yeah, sort of take over the Temple Mount. It won't go down well with the Muslim population of that region or the world. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not like saying, oh, Israel, don't do it. Like, you shouldn't do it. I'm not saying that. It's a messed up situation, isn't it? Messed up situation. When two religions venerate the exact same thing and claim it as theirs and theirs alone, kind of. And that's backed up by a sort of their sort of a dogmatic religious like doctrine that's completely intractable. Bit of an impasse, right? So, well, I'm just saying, I thought that was an interesting story. It might be nothing to it. It might be just The Guardian and Jordan whipping up crazy nonsense. It might be the Israeli army occupies Temple Mount tomorrow. Okay. Warning over safety of early release tagging. They're saying that when they release these prisoners early, they give them an ankle tag. And that those tags, like, often, or a bit, don't work. Oh, great. They either fail to work or fail to work properly. Huh. All right. Okay. It's just a complete clown show, isn't it? From top to bottom these days. This country. That's Alan Partridge again. All right, The Star. They put some slot higher up here today. All right, something about disgusting Rhiannon. Don't care. And it's rained. Super rain. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's super rain. They're talking about something else there, something clever. No, just that it rained a little bit. Gross. What a gross front page. The Daily Star. Mylene Class had a cancer scare. She hasn't got cancer. She thought she might, but she hasn't. Something about Rihanna. I mean, what a pure slop, isn't it? Pure slop. If you buy The Star, you read The Star regularly, you must have the mind of a child. Okay, the eye paper. Private firms may face ban on profiteering to make care homes cheaper. All right, well, it would be nice, wouldn't it, for care homes to be cheaper or more affordable, certainly. But again, putting a ban on profit, on making profits. A government puts a ban on making profits. There's other words to describe that, aren't there? Like socialism. I mean, it's not right. Again, don't get me wrong. It's not good or right that care home companies should rinse people of their money. But when the government gets involved, like a command economy, It ultimately never works. Ultimately never works. Let's read what it says. Ministers could impose profit caps on private social care providers in a bid to keep costs down as Andy Burnham prepares to tackle decades-long crisis. I mean, it's not that there's not a crisis. It's not that some care home providers are out of order. It's just to put like blanket bans and caps on things. The market's got a way of dealing with that. You know, the result of this will probably be that ultimately that there are just fewer care homes in total. Because those firms, those private firms are like, well, all right, well, we close down then. Well, we'll take our business to another country. We're not going to do it then. And so there's fewer care homes. You know, it is quite as simple as that, right? We'll put, it always happens, we'll put a price cap on cheese, say. I always go to cheese, don't I? But it's the same principle, exactly the same principle, right? We'll put a price cap on cheese. Cheese producers go, all right, well, we can't do it. We're not going to do it one way or another. So then in the supermarkets, there's no cheese now. It's really straightforward. The cause and effect of that is really straightforward. So, okay, on the face of it, you're like, well, it would be evil not to do this, wouldn't it? The evil private healthcare, old age care, the private firms, they're evil profiteers. Let's do something to stop it. Right. At first blush, you think, yeah, okay, good idea, yeah. Let's do what's right for old people in care, sure. But then one step later, you see the problems with it. All right. Officials tell the iPaper limits on private providers behind children's homes and fostering agencies could be extended after PM criticised profiteering. Oh, so he's also talking about children's homes. Okay, children's homes and foster care agencies. Except, well, but it'll be exactly the same thing. Because sometimes, right, sometimes with this sort of thing, profiteering, sometimes certain companies, certain markets, they really are profiteering in sort of the truest word, in the truest sense of the word profiteering. And they should be curbed. It's sort of right, sort of reasonable that the government might step in to curb sort of insane profiteering. Okay. But when it's something where the margins are small, like the production of cheese or eggs or bread or foster agencies and children's homes, they won't be like completely insane early 19th century capitalist profiteers twiddling their moustaches. We're going to profit all the millions and millions and millions on top we're making by needlessly rinsing people. It won't be that. The profits will be marginal, won't they? It'll be marginal. So a government comes in and says, right, that's the cap. That's the most you can do. And they're like, oh, well, that's everything. That's all of it. That's all the profit. So we're out of business now. You guys get it. You guys get it. MP facing funding challenge with average space costing nearly £1,000 a week. Yeah. Okay. James O'Brien, look, they've used like a 20-year-old picture of James O'Brien. Isn't he much fatter and much ruddier than that now? They used a really old picture of him. Well, he looks like normal. He doesn't look like a radish. All right. James O'Brien opines in the iPaper. Ready for this brilliant take? Such insight. Farage hoping no one notices immigration has fallen. All right. Okay, James. Okay, James. Disgusting cretin. I hope no one's noticed. Right. James O'Brien hopes no one's noticed that we've been invaded. James O'Brien hopes that no one's noticed that every town and city up and down this country is filled with third world barbarians. That's what James O'Brien hopes. James O'Brien is hoping that no one particularly cares that they're being demographically replaced in their one and only ancestral homeland. That's what James O'Brien hopes. Oh, immigration has fallen. It may have fallen slightly, but it's still ongoing. And the invasion is a fait accompli. Mostly, largely, to some degree. We're not supposed to notice that bit of it, though, James, no. The immigration figures have been just been punching us in the face for year after year after year, and now they're punching us in the face slightly less hard. It's now an open slap to the face rather than a punch. Oh. And we are invaded. James O'Brien says Farage is hoping no one has noticed that immigration has fallen a tiny bit. Do you not notice, James, that our towns and cities are filled with foreign people? Not noticed that? Have you not noticed the crime rate among these people per capita? No? No? There is data. There is data. You not noticed that, James, no? You not noticed the mass casualty events over the last 10, 15 years or so? You not noticed that, James, no? It's very interesting what someone like James O'Brien, there are many like them, aren't there? What they do and don't notice. It's very interesting what James O'Brien fails to notice, fails to understand. Oh, don't understand crime rates per capita. Don't understand that. What are you talking about? Don't understand demographic decline. I don't get it. I don't know what you're talking about. You must be a Nazi. Well, best of luck to James O'Brien and his drinking problem. Right. The Daily Express. It's a good paper. You can read your Express now. It's not, of course, I'm being sarcastic. That's another Alan Partridge line. It's pure globalist slop. Wearing the skin suit of nativism and patriotism. Pure slop. As disaster is narrowly averted in the Channel with 173 migrants rescued from a mega dinghy. Oh, there's mega dinghies now. It's not just dinghies, they're mega dinghies. Senior politicians demand French police stop standing by. How many more lives will you risk by doing nothing, asks the Express. Do they care? They don't care. The Express doesn't care about the lives of these migrants, nor our invasion. All they care about is getting a click or you buying their paper. How much is it? Does it say? It used to say at the top how much it actually costs. Oh, £2.10. Really? £2.10 for a copy of The Express? It's not a good deal, is it? £2.10. Seems like only the other day it was like 50p. Ridiculous, £2.10. All right. They don't care. The Express doesn't care. Doesn't care about us. Because whenever you get a party, even Reform, let alone Restore, get parties like Reform or Restore, or you might get a Tory come out and say something based, come out and say something sort of in the national interest, in the interest of the people, some sort of nativist sentiment about the small boat crisis, whatever it is, the Express will just try and destroy them. So do they care about this invasion? No, of course not. It's a cynical attempt to just sell a newspaper. There's nothing more to it than that. How many more lives will be at risk? Why are you pretending to care? The Express, gross, gross, gross. Can you imagine the cabal of Fleet Street editors in their Telegram group or WhatsApp group or whatever it is? Hey, over at the Express, this is just for you guys. Pretend you care about the lives of migrants in the Channel. Do that tomorrow, yeah? Good. Don't mention what George Osborne really is, though. Don't do a story about what he is, what he represents. Don't do that. Don't do a story looking into David Lammy's finances and who's given him loads and loads of money. Don't do that. No. Don't do a story about the 190 rapes a day that happen in Britain. Don't do that. Don't do that. Just pretend you care about the lives of the beast men that are invading us on a daily basis. Just do that. We've decided that's what's going to get you most clicks, sell most papers. Yeah. You're good at lying, aren't you, The Express? You're good at pretending to be something you're not. You do it every day, so off you pop. Go on. All right, the Metro. Ugh. The Metro is one of the worst. Really, really subversive, the Metro. Terribly, terribly subversive. Worse than The Guardian, even. The Guardian's kind of honest with what it is, kind of. The Guardian's more honest with what it is than The Express or The Mail. Or The Metro. Metro is revolting. But what have they got today? Early release scheme sparks heartbreak. Jailed just last year, but son's killer already set for freedom. I mean, not quite. It's not quite what's gone on here, but still. I'm not going to defend this early release program. Classic sort of Fabian thing. Champagne socialist thing. Letting prisoners out early. Why would you? Unless you actively wanted to destroy the society, the fabric of the society. Bring about a set of events that were conducive to an actual revolution or something. Why would you dream of it? Instead of early release, they could build some prisons, even prefab Nightingale prisons. Should we make some Nightingale prisons? Or just deport the few 10,000 foreign nationals we've got in our jails. Or the dual citizen ones, strip them of the British part of their citizenship and then send them back to the other country they're a citizen of. Could do that, but no. We'll just release prisoners. All right, so this story. This kid got stabbed to death. He was only 15. It's like a good... Oh. He got stabbed to death at 15. And the person that actually did the stabbing, apparently stabbed him 8 times with a massive zombie knife. And this guy didn't actually stab him. He was just there goading him on, goading on the stabber. That's what this article says. Never, I don't remember hearing this story at the time or anything. That's what he did. And he went to prison for that. I mean, if you know more about the details in the case, of the case, don't you mean? It's literally, I've only read, a couple of hundred words about it this morning. So if I've got any of those details slightly wrong, apologies. It'll be in good faith. I believe that this guy just egged him on. Anyway, he went to prison for a while. He was supposed to have gone in jail for a few years. A small number of years. And after 1 year, they're going to let him out. Slightly similar in a way to this guy. There were 3 people involved. This cop, right? He was dragged behind the car, wasn't he? And killed. PC Harper. There were 3 people involved in that, right? His leg got caught up. I think it was his leg. Anyway, somehow he got caught up in like a tow line. It's not like they deliberately tied him with a rope to their car and a rope to him and then dragged him. That's not what happened, but he got caught up in it and they just drove away. Right? 3 people in that car that was dragging him down the road. Now, the person that was actually driving the car, they're not set for early release. It's the other 2 that were at the scene and involved in it and were just in the car, but not actually driving it. They're the 2 that are getting early release. So a little bit, a parallel between this guy. He wasn't actually the murderer as such, but he was part of the murder scene. He has some responsibility for what happened there that day. You know, you get it. And there's another story somewhere else. I think it might be on one of the websites where, again, and it's another story like that where a person that's getting released early was sort of involved in an incident but not like the main person, you know. But not that I'm not trying to excuse it in any way or run defense on behalf of this early release scheme. I think I've made it clear. I think it's ridiculous, an abomination, sickening. Okay. Burnham betrayal fury. Cops, police. I think I guess it would be the police force he worked for. Cops vow legal fight to block early release as PC Harper's of PC Harper's killers. See you in court, PM. Andy Burnham faces. Yeah, he just says the cops themselves are going to take. I don't know. I doubt it's Andy Burnham personally. Probably the Home Office. Would have thought. He didn't say in that blurb what it was. Yeah, they're going to try and appeal it and try and keep his killers in jail for longer. Bradley Cooper's married that Gigi Hadid. Okay, don't care. Nicole Kidman, the love life that drove her away from A-listers. Don't care. Right, the Daily Telegraph, the Telegraph. Look at the state of this. You're only listening to the audio. It's a picture of tiny little Olukemi Badenoch, the Nigerian anchor baby, somehow finds herself LARPing as the leader of the opposition because of some sort of insane fetish for an out-group preference among the Tory party. An anchor baby, a foreign woman, a Nigerian woman, somehow is the leader of the Conservative Party. Bizarrely, perversely. She went out on some raid with the cops because she's saying, "Oh, if I was the Prime Minister, I'd make 10,000 new policemen." They always say that, don't they? They always seem to say that. 10,000 new policemen. So haggard. But then she's gone out with the cops, and they've put a police high vis vest on her. She's folding her arms like a girl boss with a police baseball cap on. What? She's like, what is she like, 5'2" or something? She's tiny. She's a tiny little Nigerian woman wants to lead our country. Ugh. Disgusting. Absolutely revolting. Don't trust a word she says. Don't trust a word she says. It's just one big weird, like, it's one big humiliation ritual on us, isn't it? Let's see if they'll accept an actual Nigerian anchor baby as their prime minister. Let's see if we can hoodwink them into accepting that. Like she's based, like she cares about the country. Wasn't it just a few years ago she was standing up in Parliament gloating about more foreign student visas she crammed into this country? But now she's the actual leader of the opposition. She calculates politically it's best for her to appear based, to say based things. Don't trust her. Don't trust the Tory party at all. We'll never, ever, ever again. They had 14 years, didn't they? Didn't they have 14 years to not walk us into a demographic nightmare? And yet that's exactly what they did. Wasn't she a part of those governments? Not for the whole 14 years, but wasn't she part of those governments? Yes, she was. Yes, she was. Is she part of the problem that has now, I believe, unfortunately, has hard baked into our future a nightmarish sectarian horror? A 1990s Yugoslavia style sectarian nightmare along racial, religious, and sectarian lines. Tribal lines. Yeah, this person. And then, but she's going to stand there like a girl boss and tell us she knows what to do about the police. She wants to be the head of our government. Get away from me, you freak. You disgusting freak. You're in the wrong country. You're Nigerian. Why don't you go to Nigeria and get involved in Nigerian politics, the land of your ancestors? This isn't your land. You're an anchor baby. Revolting. Setting free PC Harper's killers is not justice. Yes, true. Yeah. Burnham warned that he must reverse decision as anchor grows over early release. Yeah. 1,000 staff at Bank of England work from beach. Quote, work from beach. Quote. Little story, I quickly read this morning. Saying that a whole bunch of people that work for the Bank of England, I guess they've got, you know, the version of working from home. An extension to that would be, well, if you work from home remotely, all you need is a laptop and the internet, and you can do your job. You don't necessarily have to be in your actual home. You could be anywhere. As long as you sign in and do your work. Could be in a foreign country. That's what this is. Work from beach is just sort of a shorthand for working from anywhere in the world, basically. It doesn't necessarily mean actually on the beach. The article says that that it's actual a policy at the Bank of England that not only are you allowed to work, some people for some of the time, not only are you allowed to work from home, you're allowed to work from a foreign country. Thousands. I can't remember the numbers. It's really small there, but it's thousands of them. Thousands of them. Sweet job. So you could be on a beach, couldn't you? Quite possibly on, be sunning yourself on the beach at Koh Phangan, sipping a pina colada, whilst fiddling around with the spreadsheets for your Bank of England job. Great. Okay. Weird. Okay, what else have we got? The Mail, disgusting slop. The globalist slop, The Mail. Just like The Express, pretending to be right of centre sometimes. They're not. When it comes down to it, when it boils down to it, if you're an actual nationalist or a patriot or a nativist, they despise you and want you ruined. That's The Mail. That's who they are. 9,300 domestic abusers set to be released. Again, do they care, really? Tories and charity bosses accuse Burnham of putting vulnerable women at new risk. You don't care about women being vulnerable, The Mail. You don't care about that. Why are you pretending to? If you cared about it, you wouldn't demonise and try and destroy anyone that talks about re-migration. Trying to make it safer for women. But today, in order to sell a paper, £1.30. It's interesting. Mail's significantly cheaper than The Express. Still, £1.30. It's not worth it, is it? 30p, maybe. Trying to pretend they care about the safety of women. They don't. They don't. They go with this freak. This story's still ongoing. Look at him. Is he wearing eyeliner? Oh. I joke about Andy Burnham wearing eyeliner. Guy liner. He doesn't really. He just happens to have really dark eyelashes. Andy Burnham, doesn't he? No, Sternum Burnham. King of the North, first of his name. I don't think, all joking aside, I don't think Burnham actually applies a guy liner every morning. This dude looks like he does. I've seen a few pictures where it's like, are you wearing a bit of mascara there, mate? I can barely look at it. What a liar and a freak and a charlatan. Wrong'un. Most fantastical life story ever told. They're delving into his life more and more, or the things he's claimed that has happened during his life that he's done. And it's just a complete, a slew of lies, just a cavalcade of nonsense that's not true. Ooh, a Walter Mitty. There's all sorts of words you could use, couldn't you? A cheat. Don't lie, other than very, very little white lies to save somebody else's embarrassment. Never lie. Never lie. Lie about something big. No. It's really badly wrong. Disgusting. Disgusting. All right, the Financial Times. The venerable Financial Times. This story's reasonably interesting to me. Air combat, tomorrow's Top Gun rises. They're talking about, it's the next generation of, it's effectively fast jets, right? They're unmanned. They're not drones. Well, it's basically like the next generation of fast jets, but they'll be unmanned. This one's called the Valkyrie. Testing on the Valkyrie. Because, of course, one of the limiting factors in a fast jet, like an F-18 or whatever, F-22, Typhoon Eurofighter, whatever it is the amount of G's the man inside, the amount of G-force the man sitting inside it can handle. That's the limiting factor, right? You can build an airframe that can sustain much, much higher forces than that if you wanted to. So if you take the man out of it, you can do more incredible things with that vehicle. Pretty straightforward, isn't it? All right, what have we got here in the mirror? The Beckhams are still in a feud. Brooklyn, don't care. Just do not care. The knife crime thing. Knife crime. Grieving families' relief. 40 knives a day off our streets. Huge response to Blade Amnesty appeals. Parents say everyone is a life saved. We've talked about knife crime before, haven't we? A number of times. I think it's cynical to get like the grieving families of stab victims and get them to tell us that our society shouldn't have knives in it now. Seen that a number of times, haven't we? You should only be able to buy a cleaver or a knife that's the end of it is rounded off. So it would only ever be a slashing weapon, not an actual stabbing weapon. That's not the point, is it? It's like if there's more and more incidents of people driving cars into crowds, you start thinking about banning cars. You've missed the point then, haven't you? You've missed the point then. Like loads more acid attacks happen. Let's ban the container that you can hold acid in. That particular type of plastic which acid has no effect on. Let's ban that. No, you're missing the... That's not the crux of the issue, is it? Times, the venerable times. This is mildly funny. Not again. Quote, not again. What wife thought of Burnham's third shot at number 10? Just a little story that says Andy Burnham's wife, when he told her, I wonder when he did tell her actually. I wonder at what point Andy Burnham realised thought it might actually genuinely be on the cards to coup Keir Starmer. Anyway, apparently when he said to her, he's going to go for it, do it. Her response was, not again. We've been through this twice, and you failed twice already, really? Right, well, she's in the number 10 flat now, isn't she? Above number 10. The First Lady of Great Britain. She gets to go to Chequers at a weekend, if she fancies it. Got round-the-clock protection, SAS protection, or whatever it is. Not the SAS. Well, sometimes, actually, maybe they are often ex-SAS dudes. Anyway. Her name will now go down in the annals of, like, the wives or the spouses of prime ministers. Said wives, of course, there are husbands, aren't there? Remember Dennis Thatcher? She gets to be in that list. All right. Nobody does it better than MI6. Admit French spies. Well, interesting. MI6 is our foreign intelligence service, right? MI5 do domestic internal stuff and the equivalent of the FBI, sort of. And MI6 is foreign intelligence, the equivalent of like the CIA, basically. The French say we do it best. Or the article said a number of different intelligence services said that we're quite good at it still. Okay. Borrowing splurge in bid to boost economy. Ministers set to exploit change in fiscal rules. This is a classic example. This is a classic example of how governments are underhanded and a pack of cheaters and liars, really. It's saying, this is just so classic, that the government itself, it's the way it measures various things, fiscal matters, the way it measures them, it's going to tweak those to make things appear better so they can borrow more. Right? They, under Rachel Reeves, apparently it was one of the last things she did, or under the Rachel Reeves chancellorship, she was set to and has now tweaked the way the government sort of count equity in certain companies. That's basically what it is. In other words, infrastructure and companies, the way the government itself counts and measures things, they're going to do it in a slightly different way so that it seems, so the whole picture seems more rosy. Nothing's actually changed. Get it? Nothing's actually changed. But now things seem a bit better so that they can borrow more. So they can borrow more to spend more. borrowing splurge in bid to boost economy. You can spend your way out of financial ruin. No. No. We've already, spending way beyond our means. Find that we spend an insane amount of money paying off the interest on what we've already borrowed. They'll tweak around the edges so they can borrow more because they won't stop spending. Burnham and the Fabians, Champagne Socialist Pinkos in number 10, won't stop spending. Want to spend more. Crazy. Imagine being in an insane amount of debt and you just get out another credit card or something. Unsustainable, completely unsustainable. Completely unsustainable. Terrible. Insane, really. Insane. Kind of. But we've got some of Andy Burnham's financial advisor people close to him are quite literally Marxist, literally. It's not just like a slur from me. They would describe themselves as Marxists. They hate capitalism. Capitalism is a system that needs to be ripped down and destroyed. Blow it up from the inside, if necessary. That's who we've got. All right, they're the front pages. There you go. They're the increasingly infuriating and absurd front pages from Fleet Street today. All right, should we do our poll? We look at our poll about this time of the show, don't we, Harry? Can you bring that up for me? I think we asked the chat for a poll for an idea, didn't we, today? Is that right?
We did, yeah.
Okay. Most mornings, you watch the Bo Show regularly, most mornings, we just come up with a poll before the show starts and put it up. But sometimes we haven't got time, or we can't think of something, or we just want to give you you guys the opportunity. Because quite often people say, oh, that poll was lame, or that was a low-energy poll, or whatever. Something we let you guys pick it. So Harry asked the chat, so I haven't even read it yet. Whatever it is, it's what you guys wanted the poll to be today. I really don't know what it's going to be. So I'm going to read this now in real time. Will it be something silly and flippant, or will it be something really interesting and or spicy? What have we got? Okay. We've got, how long do you think it will take for the AI bubble to burst? Oh, okay. It's reasonably interesting, reasonably serious. We gave you the option of 1 year, 5 years, it won't ever burst, it already has burst. All right. And what have we got? Oh, it's a fair split among all those things. Just about edging it on 28% is 1 year. Again, the question is, how long do you think it will take for the AI bubble to burst? You guys think 1 year. 28% of you say that. It's very close. It won't ever burst. 27% of you say that. It won't ever burst. You sure about that? All right. 26% of you say 5 years. And coming in fourth, but still not that far away, with 19%, say it has already burst. Opinion completely split there. Completely split. Interesting, though. I think it is good to have a poll, not every single day, but a poll where it's like a serious question and it splits opinion, rather than just teeing you up for something. You know, like, yes, was it yesterday where we said, do you think the military should be deployed in the channel to protect our borders? And like 97-98% of you said yes. A slam dunk, isn't it? So obviously so. All right, well, opinion completely split on the AI bubble there. All right, it's nearly 10-2. Should we have a quick look at some of the other websites? Because I can't spend a great deal of time after 9 today. I'm on the main podcast later, by the way. Oh, do make sure you're subscribed to this channel. Hit the thumbs up. Do hit the thumbs up if you can. Get the bell on. And tune in at 1 p.m. British Summer Time today for another podcast. There's me, Big Harry, and Luca, is it? Maybe Stelios? Definitely me and Big Harry. All right. What other stories were there that were interesting, I thought, of note? Have a look. Oh, yeah, this guy. Do you remember Perez Hilton? Harry, does that name ring a bell to you? Is it already old news?
No clue.
You don't know Perez Hilton? All right, for people who might not know, then he was just like he's a blogger in America, a celebrity blogger who, back at perhaps more in the early 2000s or the 2010s time, he would quite often, sometimes, breaking news would come out through his blog. Like, he seemed to have loads of connections and know people, like, know, like, the rumor, you know, like a bit like TMZ, something like that. And he would, it might break first, he might break it first. Paris Hilton. Well, apparently he was live streaming the other day and he was covered in blood and wielding a knife and threatening self-harm and stuff. And the cops had to go round. According to the Mail, I don't follow Paris Hilton. I wasn't watching that live stream, so there you go. All right. What else have we got? Look at this. This looks worse than it is. Don't worry, you're not watching someone die here. Don't worry, it's not snuff footage.
Rare
look, there's a drone.
The reality of daily life for ordinary Ukrainians living close to the front. Remotely operated, a Russian drone chases vegetable vendor Yuri around his Kherson market stall. The menacing buzz before it swoops. Miraculously, Yuri survived, suffering shrapnel wounds, concussion, and trauma.
He's not dead. I mean, he's pretty badly wounded, but not even sort of mortally, you know, not sort of terribly, terribly wounded. He's lucky, wasn't it? The reason why I even show that at all, talk about that at all, is just because that could be is the future of all sorts of wars. Might be something like that. One day you might find yourself. He was just a completely, pretty much, as far as I understand, as far as the reporting goes, he was like a pretty normal dude. He didn't really have anything to do with, like, the Ukraine-Russian war effort either way. He was just a vegetable seller dude, street seller dude. Why a Russian drone would want to kill him specifically doesn't really make sense to me. I don't know why, but anyway, just saying. That might be you one day. Finding yourself, oh, there's a drone. It seems to be coming after me for whatever reason. You find yourself running around a car to try and get away from it or whatever. Trying to find a little bit of cover to duck in under it because there's this drone thing. Horrible, isn't it? Horrible, scary, terrifying. He was very lucky to escape with his life. Donald Trump poised to give Iran greater control over Straits of Hormuz. Says the Express website. Difficult to say that what's going on with the State Department, Mr. Trump, the White House, the State Department and the Pentagon's policy with Iran has not completely come off the rails. Surely it's completely come off the rails now. Remember the first day when Trump did that address with the white baseball cap on from Mar-a-Lago? We've struck in Iran. We've killed the... It's about regime change in Iran. Wiped out all their leadership, all their army and navy is, well, within the first two, three weeks of it, all their army and navy is just destroyed. It's over. It's only going to be a few week thing. Now here we are. Well, like 6 months later or something. Trump was to give Iran greater control of the Straits of Hormuz. I cannot buy the Steve Turley type angle that this is all 4D chess. 5D chess. Trump, Rubio, and Hegseth are masters of strategy. Don't look like it, does it? Don't think so, mate. All right, let's have a look at On This Day in History, shall we? On the 5th of August, down through the centuries, nay millennia. What happened of note? Right, what we got? On the 5th of August, in the year 910. Oh, yeah, I read this one. It's wrong. The researchers on thisdayinhistory.com got it wrong, I'm afraid, quite simply. It says, on the 5th of August, in the year 910, the last major Viking army to raid England, led by Edward and the Earl of and Earl Ethelred. That's not Ethelred the Unready, by the way. There's another, and there's another one called another person called Ethelred. Is defeated at the Battle of Tatton Hall by the Allied forces of Mercia and Wessex. Okay, so that King Edward there, they're talking about is Edward the Elder. It would be. This is before, so like he's the father of Athelstan. I mean, Harry, do you think on my history themed show behind the paywall on loadcetus.com, do consider signing up for as little as £5 a month bronze tier membership? Do you think there, I've got hundreds and hundreds of hours, without exaggeration, quite literally hundreds and hundreds of hours of history themed content. Do you think I talk all about the Anglo-Saxon period there? Do you think I talk all about Athelstan, Edward the Elder, the Viking invasions during the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th centuries? Oh yeah, it's all there. Hours and hours of it, actually. To say that in the year 910 was the last major Viking army raid on England. No. That's just incorrect. Straight up incorrect. It's not like, you could make the argument that. No, it's just wrong. It's just like saying, Liverpool Football Club haven't won any trophies since the 1970s. No, that's wrong. That's just wrong. It's not like you could argue if you look at it in this particular way, you could say that no. What about the invasion of Falkbeard and Canute in the early 11th century, like 1013 or whatever it is, after the St. Brice's Day massacre? What about that? Say the last major Viking invasion was in 910. No, sorry, incorrect. I hate to be a stickler for the fact. But there you go. All right. On this day in 1305, the Scottish resistance leader William Wallace, is captured by the English near Glasgow and transported to London for a trial and execution. Do you think I've got long form content talking all about Longshanks, Edward I? Yeah. And of course, I talked there a bit about William Wallace, one of the ones, earlier ones in conversation with Carl Benjamin. You know that Carl Benjamin? You ever heard of him? Sargon of Akkad. Yeah, there's a lot to say about William Wallace. So, I mean, this isn't a history theme show. I'm just supposed to whip through these a bit. But the depiction you might have seen in that Mel Gibson film, Braveheart. A very, very loose connection to the historical fact. That film. Very loose. But there was a real William Wallace, at least. And he was captured and executed by the English. All right. For treason, sedition, being an enemy. Okay. On this day in 1583, Humphrey Gilbert claims Newfoundland for the English crown, establishing the first English colony in North America and the beginning of the British Empire. It's funny, actually. Different historians claim different things. It's like the beginning of the British Empire. You'll find some people say it might be like Roanoke Island or Jamestown or things in other parts of the world. On this day in history.com today, decide to say it's that, Newfoundland. But okay. This one I don't know a great deal about, I must say. On this day in 1716, the Battle of Petrovaradin, and that was the Habsburg forces under Prince Eugenie of Savoy. Now, I know a bit about him. I don't know much about this battle and this campaign. I know a bit about Eugene of Savoy. It says he decisively defeated a larger Ottoman army led by Grand Vizier Silahdar Damat Ali Pasha, who dies in the fighting, securing Habsburg control of a Petrovaradin fortress. Okay, as I say, don't know much about that particular campaign and that battle, but Eugene of Savoy is quite famous and important. I mean, during like the Battle of Blenheim and the War of the Spanish Succession and all sorts of things. He's an interesting figure. Really, really interesting figure. But that particular battle, don't know much about. Okay, all right. I'm not Eastern European or a Turk, so there's no real reason why I would. Okay, on this day in 1864, the Battle of Mobile Bay, won by the Union Navy, led by Rear Admiral David Farragut, with the cry, "Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead." I think I've got all sorts of content about the American Civil War. Also on my own channel History Bro, where there's no paywall there. It's all free there. You can consider going over there and maybe subscribing. Getting the bell on. All sorts of content about the American Civil War there as well. That was, I mean, that's late in the war, isn't it? 1864 is late in the war. And Mobile Bay is like the Gulf of Mexico, isn't it? So, and General Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, had already secured the Mississippi way up in America, you know. So it was just the last thing to take Mobile Bay, but still, it was defended by the Confederate Navy. What was left of it for what it was worth? Again, so late in the war, the Confederacy had been blockaded and was being starved into submission. Like, Richmond is in a terrible state by that point. But nonetheless, it did take one final push and a bit of bravery from the Union Navy to take that. But all right, okay. Let's do our Rumble Rants and Super Chats. Let me do that with my mic beam so I can see the left-hand side of my screen. Do you think Global Church History will be in at number one? I hope he is. Let's have a look. I've got a fair few Rumble Rants today. Right. Yes, Global Church History is in at number one. So he's the reigning, defending, and still champ. You say, today in 25 AD, Liu Xiu, ancient Chinese history, that's not my forte. Got a long form bit of content about the first emperor, which is like the 2nd century BC. Beyond that, and all about that in a fair bit of detail. Beyond that, my knowledge isn't great. So, like, 1st century AD, 1st century BC, Chinese history. Anyway, what have you said? Today in 25 AD, Liu Xiu, a descendant of the earlier Western Han, founded the Eastern Han Dynasty. Oh, okay. I can't add much to that, I'm afraid. He is one of the worst sort of big blind spots in my knowledge, is decent ancient and Chinese medieval history. I've got a couple of, like I say, the first emperor I know about, but did long form content on it. Qin Shi Huangdi. But beyond that, I should know more by now. Maybe I'll make it a point to study it a bit more closely. Okay, and the second factoid from Global Church History says, in 1192, Richard the Lionheart... Oh, that's it. That's back in my wheelhouse. Say, well, Richard the Lionheart, the Coeur de Lion, won at Jaffa, enabling a favourable treaty for the Crusaders. Definitely got loads of long-form content all about the Coeur de Lion, Richard the First, Richard the Lionhearted, son of Henry the Second, and his Third Crusade. That's right at the end of it, isn't it? Retaking Jaffa. He's got to near Jerusalem, because that's the point of it all, isn't it? Is to retake the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. He got just about within, he could just see the sun glinting off some of the roofs and spires of Jerusalem on the distance. That's how close he got to it. Salahuddin and the Muslim forces prevented him from actually getting there. And a lot of his own side couldn't be relied upon. I mean, the King of France, Philip II, had already gone home. So Richard the Lionheart and his Third Crusade never actually did get to Jerusalem and rescue the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And on the way back, Jaffa's right on the coast, right? He had to retake that and use it as the port of disembarkation. But they kept it for a while. The Franks, the Western Knights, kept it for quite a while after that. One of the last footholds, wasn't it? That and Acre. Jaffa and Acre were like the last toeholds. Anyway, all right. Thanks for that global church history. Moving on then. Dragon Lady Chris says, I love it when you rumble on about history. Carry on, my good man. Thanks. Cheers. It is my forte. Talking about politics and current affairs is just a side gig, really. It's history is my thing. I mean, that is my undergrad. And even my postgrad was political history, political philosophy, political history in some ways. And it's the thing I've spent my whole life, my whole adult life, well, nearly my whole life, reading and learning about history. My first forays onto YouTube were purely history stuff, so. Yeah, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. Okay, 14 Barber says, morning, Bo. All right? Yeah, I'm all right. You're all right, mate. I hope you are. You say, no more after effects of the food poisoning, I hope. Yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. That was just one day. Just one day. Thank God. Have you ever had really bad food poisoning where it takes ages to get better from it? Like, you've really been poisoned. And you're like, you're weak. And it comes back from time to time and all that sort of stuff. It takes weeks to truly get better from it. That's, I've only had that once or twice. Usually when you go abroad, isn't it? Yeah, it wasn't that. It was nothing like that. I was just sick once. So I'm fine. Thank you, Nell. Thanks for asking. I appreciate it. You put, George Knapp did an interview. Is that you put Cap? George Knapp did an interview with Robert Bigelow of Bigelow Aerospace last night. Sounded decent. Okay. Don't know about that. If I've got time, maybe I'll check that out. Okay. Aerospace technology and industries are interesting to me. And the next two are from PigDog5150. So I'll read them one off the other. You say, morning, I appreciate you couldn't read my rumble yesterday. It was a very, very spicy one. I was hoping your guest may have been there, and I would have liked to have heard from someone in Mastur about an outright Islam ban. An outright ban. And the second one you put is, I really hope that Rupert and Mastur do win and that censorship rules that restrict telling the truth are removed. Thank you for your hard work, Bo, and everyone at Los Cetus. No, thank you. I appreciate that. Appreciate that, yeah. In Bo's Britain, if I found myself absolute arbiter of all things, sort of an absolute monarch, like a Diocletian-style emperor, where whatever I said was law now, if I found myself in that situation, I would rescind nearly all speech laws. There would have to be some. In a working society, you do actually need, like, libel laws. You do need that. And there's a few other axioms, aren't there? Like, don't scream fire in a crowded theatre where there isn't a fire, which causes a stampede and kills people. You know, there's a few things where you can't have 100% freedom of speech and expression, 100%, because it's actually dangerous. But those examples are few and far between. It's nowhere near what we've got now. In Bo's Britain, I would strip away as all of it, as much as I possibly could, you know, other than those things like I mentioned. You can't just libel someone. You can't just accuse someone. Some random person who's completely innocent, like, oh, I don't know, Eamon Holmes. Someone who's completely innocent. You can't just go out there and start saying they're a murderer or a sex criminal or whatever. You can't do it. It's not. Society needs that to function. But beyond that. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for the rumble rants. Okay, two more rumble rants. One is from Boneapple Tea Party, who says, no one does spying for the French better than MI6. Philby, you talk about our spy from the 50s, Philby. Kim Philby from the 50s and 60s. You put, Philby Italia today would get knighthoods. Keep on trucking, Geronimo. Love the show, Geronimo, because I may have a tiny amount of Native American Indian ancestry. May. Tiny amount. May just be noise in the DNA. Anyway, Geronimo. I guess you are talking about Kim Philby of the Cambridge Five. I am so close to doing long-form content about Kim Philby. Fascinated by the Cambridge Five and Kim Philby and that whole spy ring. Fascinated by it. Have been for years and years and years. Read around the topic. Loads. Been threatening to do something about the Cambridge Five and more like six of them, actually. In fact, there's loads of them. You always think it's just those. No, there's loads. It was way bigger than most people think when you start looking into it in detail. I suppose the most famous one, Kim Philby, archspy, really high up at the Soviet... In fact, leading the Soviet desk at MI6. He's supposed to be our grand spy against the Soviets in the height of the Cold War. He was a Soviet. Well, I mean, he wasn't Soviet. He was an Englishman. He went to Cambridge and was very, very well to do in English. But he was working for Stalin. When he finally realised he was going to get caught, he defected to Russia and they made him a colonel in the KGB and he lived the rest of his life in Russia. That's how much of a traitor he was. The head of MI6 Soviet desk. An ultimate traitor, Kim Philby. I've got to do content about it soon. I will. All right. Fallen Firebird. Hello, Bo. As a historical polymath, you probably know... Oh, that's nice. You're describing me as a historical polymath. Yeah, a bit of an all-rounder. Polymath, though. I like that. I'll take that. I'll accept that. As a historical polymath, you probably know this. But the Persians valued truth as the highest good. You talk about the ancient Persians. And lying as the highest evil. It doesn't only disorder society, but your own soul. Yeah. Nothing really good comes from it, almost always. If I'd lied about something big and it meant I was got rich from the off the back of it, say, I wouldn't feel comfortable with it. I wouldn't feel comfortable with it the whole time. Yeah, the ancient Persians, like the Alexander era Persians, like 300 BC or whatever, they say, whether it's true or not, they say it was part of their society that they very, very valued the truth. Yeah. Good point. Okay, all right. That's the last rubber round. So the YouTube Super Chats, Harry, if you can bring that up on my screen for me. If you can make it so. Engage. All right, there we are. All right, good. We've got 10 or so. STUK8P, again in first. I've noticed the trend, the pattern there is in first. Is the YouTube equivalent of global church history. I was setting straight in with an Eamon Holmes joke. Eamon Holmes ate my hamster. The man has no soul. Ames. If you ever see this. It's a silly in-joke. Off the back of the fact I once accidentally confused you with Hugh Edwards. Accusing you, completely accidentally in good faith, of the crimes of Hugh Edwards. And ever since then it's an in-joke now. On this show, that you've done loads of terrible things. That we know you haven't. It's a bad taste joke. Sorry. Get well soon. Sincerely, genuinely, get well soon. All right. For anyone who might not know, is foreign or too young. It was Freddie Starr ate my hamster. That was a thing. It's like a real slop headline in like The Sun or The Star or something. Or the People. That Freddie Starr ate someone's hamster. I don't think he even did. I don't even know the details. I don't think he did. I think it was just a really insane throwaway headline. Like that a double-decker, London double-decker bus has been spotted on the moon. Just, no, it hasn't. Why are you reporting that? It's obvious nonsense. Elvis and Bruce Lee are still alive somewhere. Are they? Freddie Starr ate my hamster. Did he? Anyway, that's what that is. That's what it's a reference to. Anyone doesn't know. All right. Calzetti says 9/11 was high key sus. Yeah. I've got some questions about what happened that day in 2001 on the 9th of September in the year 2001 in the skies above Washington, Pennsylvania and New York. Yeah. I've written articles about it as well. At least two articles about it. Now, I've got some serious questions that have never been properly answered about that. What happened that day? The 9/11 Commission didn't cover all the bases and answer some pretty pertinent questions. Just didn't address them the way the Warren Commission did. Same thing. You might characterise it as a whitewash. Quite blackpilled, said, last live show for me, likely new job as an armed guard at a Christian school. Oh, okay. We'll be sorry to lose you. Try and watch it later in the day if you can. Oh, you got a new job there? Well, that's good. An armed guard at a Christian school. I take it you're in America. Well, let me. You've written more. Let's read it. And the BBC is tough to catch live in California. Oh, you are in California. If you don't work nights. Right. Okay. So you're going to be an armed guard at a Christian school in California. Oh, well. Good for you. I hope you never have to use your weapon. Good. Great stuff. Be sorry to lose you live. I've seen you have put in a fair few super chats over the months. Okay, try and watch it later in the day if you can, if you're so inclined. Okay, the K-Man Live, that's their name, the K-Man Live says, why do your side camera cutaways for the Metro, etc. remind me of Harry Hill's old show, Up the Real BBC? They like the lining. It dazzles. Will you the pork or will you the lamb? They're old Harry Hill jokes, if you don't know Harry Hill. I'll move on from that. Yeah, when Harry Hill first came out, he was much funnier. He became really, like, sort of mainstream, didn't he, Harry Hill? Just sort of a normal staple of everyday TV. When he was first on the scene as, like, a stand-up, he was a bit more surreal, a bit more like Vic and Bob, a bit more much funnier. I liked Harry Hill, the original old, sort of early Harry Hill. Okay, Rodney, that's his name, at Rod_Knee, says, I know it's been said before, but I feel it bears repeating. Millions must go, all in capitals. Millions must go. Aim high, vote low. Millions must go. Yeah. Yeah. Remigration is inevitable. It has to be inevitable. Otherwise, we get a sectarian nightmare along tribal lines. Racial and religious. Millions must go. They must. Okay, Punish the Wrong, K2H, says, on this day in 1980, I was born. Oh, happy birthday. Happy birthday. You're about almost exactly a year older than me. My birthday in a few days. I didn't even realise. When you get our age, what, 45? We've turned 45. When you get to our age, not like little Harry, just turned 21. It's all fun and games when you're that young. Oh, yeah, birthday, brilliant. Let's celebrate. Let's go out and have fun and celebrate. It's a great thing. When you get old, it's not a great thing anymore. It's like, oh, 1 year closer to death. A little bit anyway. It's not that bad. But it's like, it's not really a thing to celebrate much anymore. It's like, well, anyway, I hope, maybe that's just me. Maybe that's just me. But I hope you have a great day, Punish the Wrong, K2H. Happy birthday to you. Many happy returns. Okay, the last two here. Mr. Gently Benevolent says, Talking Turley is the ultimate cope merchant, Bo. I think he is. He would tell you it's a grand strategy to identify launch sites if America was nuked. I don't watch Turley loads. I watch him a little bit. I watch him a little bit to sort of see the same reason why you would read The Guardian or watch Politics Joe or something, is to see what the left are talking about, see where their mind is, not because you agree with it and like it, you know? I do the same with Turley a bit. It's not because I love Turley's takes. I think he's brilliant and all his takes are great. You see, what might Turley's take be on this? It'd be interesting just to know, just to see. Although I must say, again, I don't watch him religiously at all. I watch him from time to time. I would say maybe a third, maybe as much as a half of his takes aren't too bad. Which isn't a great hit and miss ratio, is it? Half. It's not terrible. It's not like James O'Brien, where it's literally nothing he says is good. Ever. Half is not bad, but half isn't. Half is like, as you said, what did you call it? Ultimate cope merchant. Yeah. If half of your takes are just copium. Any good? Is that good? Yeah, not really. No, I agree with him. I remember when Trump lost to Biden, the amount of, it was a stolen election, wasn't it? Probably, almost certainly. Looks increasingly like it was. But the amount of cope coming out of Turley at that point. Sort of lost his mind a little bit. But I don't mind him. He's all right. He's effectively on our side of the aisle, isn't he? Better than being a subversive pinko. All right. Acid Helm, AC1D Helm, says, joined Bronze, noticed... Oh, right, you actually joined LotusLeaders.com, Bronze Team Membership. Joined Bronze, noticed Epochs goes 1-2-4, any reason? We're missing episode 3. That's frustrating, I'll get onto that today. You're saying episode 3 isn't even there. Why? Why would it not be there? That's so frustrating to me. A number of times I've made sure that they're all there and in order. Why would it not be there now? Thanks for letting me know, though. Really appreciate that. If anyone else ever notices anything like that wrong, well, let me know. Why is it not there? That's annoying. All right. But Lotus Eaters app would be good to listen to on the mobile, as the website doesn't like background play. Okay. I actually don't have the Lotus Eaters app on my phone. Have we got an app? We've got an app, haven't we? Harry?
Oh, I'm not sure.
How do we not know that? Even if there was one, I wouldn't have it on my phone. I don't use my phone for anything other than phone calls and text messages. I deliberately don't. Because I would be on it all the time. Like, if I had Twitter on my phone, I know that almost every spare moment I'd be like, let's have a look at Twitter. And I don't want to do that. So I deliberately, maybe it's really old boomer, old school, maybe I'm being weird. I actively don't want my phone to be one more screen that I can just do everything on the internet on. That's how I do it anyway. Works for me. I'm happy with that. All right, that's the show. It's now 22 minutes past 9 in the AM British summertime on Wednesday the 5th of August in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me. You've been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. Really, really appreciate it. Can't say that enough. Without you guys, it's not a thing. All right, well, try and make the best of the day ahead. If you can, try and make it count. Carpe diem, seize the day if you can. If you're not working or whatever, you're at liberty to do what you want today with your time. Try and do something valuable with it if you can. I don't want to be all preachy, but it's for your sake. You've only got a finite number of days on this earth. I don't get really dark about it, but that is true. The most valuable thing you'll ever have is your own time. More valuable than gems and gold and houses and cars. Can't take any of that with you, can you? The only thing of real value you will ever have is your time. Try and make it count if you can. All right then. Till tomorrow morning.